Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. Today is January the 26th, 2011. My name is Frank Weltner, and you're listening to The World Today. In today's news, we find a PC World story entitled Google Comes Under Fire for Secret Relationship with the National Security Agency. Consumer watchdog and advocacy group, largely focused in recent years on Google's privacy practices, has called on a congressional investigation into the internet concerning the giant's cozy relationship with U.S. President Barack Obama's administration. In a letter sent Monday, Consumer Watchdog asked Representative Daryl Issa, the new chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, to investigate the relationship between Google and several government agencies. The group asked Issa to investigate contracts at several U.S. agencies for Google technology and services. The secretive relationship between Google and the U.S. National Security Agency and the company's use of a U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration airfield in California. Federal agencies have also taken insufficient action in response to revelations last year that Google's Street View cars were collecting data from open Wi-Fi connections they passed. We believe Google has inappropriately benefited from close ties to the administration, the letter said. Google is most consumers' gateway to the internet. Nonetheless, it should not get special treatment and access because of a special relationship with the administration. Consumer Watchdog may have an ally in Issa, a California Republican. In July, Issa sent a letter to Google raising concerns that White House Deputy Chief Technology Officer Andrew McLaughlin, the former head of global public policy for Google, had inappropriate email contact with company employees. This year's budget deficit, representing a continually weak economy and last month's bipartisan tax cut legislation, will drive the government's deficit to a record $1.5 trillion this year. The eye-popping numbers mean the government will continue to borrow 40 cents for every dollar it spends. The new Congressional Budget Office estimates will add fuel to a raging debate over cutting spending and looming legislation that's required to allow the government to borrow more money as the national debt clears the $14.3 trillion cap set by law. Republicans controlling the House say there's no way they'll raise the limit without significant cuts in spending, starting with a government funding bill that will advance next month. The CBO analysis predicts the economy will grow by 3.1% this year, but that joblessness will remain above 9%. Well, that seems pretty terrible there, considering all the trillions of dollars that have been spent to increase jobs in America. Obviously, there will be no jobs increase. Things are going to remain exactly as they were in 2008, which will mean that by the time the year's over, there will be a 3-year drought in hiring, which means that those people who are going to lose their house have no hope whatsoever of maintaining their ability to pay their mortgages. And the banks once again have sequestered themselves behind their offices in such a manner as to make sure that the people in this country are not going to get what they need, which is more consideration from banks. Of course, the banks themselves are basically failed banks, and the only reason they're still around is that legislation has dealt with the issue by saying that none of them basically can be closed without special direction from the freak show in Washington, D.C. Of course, the fat, pus-filled legislatures and the president have absolutely no desire to anger their beneficiaries, who are the bankers of this country, who were in cahoots with the drug dealers and with the petroleum operatives, who do everything they can to wangle money out of the people of this country for shady business deals. They have no intention of doing anything that would anger the bankers, because the bankers give them money for their campaigns. This $1.3 trillion deficit is on track to beat the record of $1.4 trillion set in 2009. That figure reflected huge outlays from the Wall Street bailout. The nonpartisan budget agency predicts the deficit will drop to $1.1 trillion next year, but that remains to be seen. Republican lawmakers in nearly a dozen states are reaching into the dusty annals of American history to fight President Obama's health care overhaul, which of course is not an overhaul at all, but which is a remake of medical care to serve the insurance industry. The Republicans are introducing measures that hinge on nullification, Thomas Jefferson's late 18th century doctrine that purported to give states the ultimate say in constitutional matters. GOP lawmakers introduced such a measure in the Idaho House and in Alabama, Kansas, Maine, Missouri, Montana, Oregon, Nebraska, Texas, and Wyoming. The efforts are completely unconstitutional in the eyes of most legal scholars, because the U.S. Constitution deems federal laws the supreme law of the land. The Idaho Attorney General has weighed in as well, branding nullification unconstitutional. There is no right to pick and choose which federal laws a state will follow, wrote Assistant Chief Deputy Attorney General Brian Kane. Regardless of the very dubious constitutional nature of the efforts, the nullification push has become a rallying cry in conservative states at a time when anti-government angst is running high and states' rights are a popular belief among the Tea Party crowd. Delegates at Idaho's Republican convention last year urged seizure of federal lands and resurrection of the gold standard. Conservatives in Montana lined up out the door of a legislative committee room last week to speak in favor of a bill that would make sheriffs the supreme local authorities. In Texas, a nullification proposal threatens state officials who don't comply with jail time and fines. Last year in Austin, an insurance salesman led a Texas state capitol rally as protesters hoisted signs urging not just nullification, but secession. Fearful that the fall of the Tunisian government might be a precursor to the fall of the Egyptian government, internet sites such as Twitter and Facebook were cut off within Egypt as the government of President Hosni Mubarak tried to prevent social media from being used to foment unrest. Many sites registered in Egypt could not be reached from outside, according to Herdic.org, a website where users report access problems. Twitter, YouTube, Hotmail, Google, Chinese search engine Baidu, and a proxy service which would allow users to evade obvious restrictions, appeared to be blocked from inside the country, according to reports on the site. Twitter said blocking was intermittent and some users were able to tweet, while Bamboo's very Swedish site for streaming video for mobile phones said it had been blocked after being used by some protesters this week. About 24%, or 19.2 million of Egypt's 80 million population, have internet access, usually through internet cafes, mobile internet, or public information technology clubs. About 1 million have home access via computer. Far more people, about 26 million, have mobile phones, so protests could be organized via text message. Vodafone, one of the two largest mobile phone operators there, said it was not responsible for blocking Twitter. It's a problem all over Egypt, and we are waiting for a solution. Other reports say the government has disabled mobile phone towers and the telephone service, and that all communications have been disrupted, but this could not be confirmed. The government could order internet service providers to filter out services or block sites, but usually cracks down on writers and bloggers. In 2009, the Committee to Protect Journalists listed Egypt as one of the 10 worst countries for bloggers because of the tendency to arrest critics. I guess that we might say that Egypt is following in the footsteps of the FBI and the CIA in the persecution and arrest of Julian Assange of WikiLeaks for releasing information that the government does not deem appropriate to its propaganda needs. And so, like America, Egypt has decided to silence its critics. Well, that's really too bad, isn't it? What a world we live in. Meanwhile, Iran's allies have gained clout and possible softer edges. From the Afghan Badlands to the Mediterranean, evidence of Iran's reach is easy to spot. A mix of friend and foe for Kabul leaders, a power broker in Iraq, deep alliances with Syria, and big brother to Lebanon's Hezbollah and Hamas in Gaza, Tehran's proxy portfolio suddenly has a bit more aura after Hezbollah's political gambit, which brought down a pro-Western government in Lebanon and moving into position to block its successor. Isn't that interesting? Here you have a pro-Western government in Lebanon. Why would you have a pro-Western government in Lebanon? I would certainly like to know that. Lebanon is in the Middle East. Why would it be pro-Western? The Westerners have nothing good to say or do with Lebanon. To those keeping score, it would appear that Iran is winning some important points around the Middle East at the expense of Washington and its fascist allies. But such gains have potential built-in costs, experts say. With Iran's extended family increasingly joining the ranks of power, first in Gaza, then Iraq, and now Lebanon, there also comes pressure to moderate and make other compromises often required from those in charge. It eventually could bring some uncomfortable contrasts for Tehran, with its partners in the region embracing more flexible policies, and Iran facing more sanctions and isolation for refusing to make concessions over its nuclear program. And I always keep asking, why should they concede anything about their nuclear program? The United States has 20,000 nuclear weapons and Iran has none, so why should the United States be so concerned about Iran? The whole thing is ridiculous. Certainly there is more visible Iranian influence around the region, said Salman Shak, director of the Brookings Donna Center in Qatar. But these are no longer just vassals of Iran. As they move into political roles, there will be changes that Iran cannot control. We shouldn't look at Lebanon as a zero-sum game between Iran and the West. And the same may hold true elsewhere. In Iraq, influence from Iran is on the rise now that backers of militant Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr have joined the government in Baghdad, which already had deep ties with Iran. Al-Sadr remains fiercely opposed to American occupiers, which is Mahdi army militia battled for years. But al-Sadr, who took refuge in Iran in 2007, showed hints of trying to cultivate a more statesmanlike demeanor during his first visit back to Iraq. Al-Sadir this month held meetings that included pro-Western fascist figures such as President Jalil Tabani and urged Iraq's majority Shiites and Sunnis to look beyond their past bloodshed with the fascist invaders. There's little chance that Al-Sadir will ease his demands, that the right-wing Pentagon in America stick to its timetable to withdraw all troops by the end of the year. And his Iranian links are obvious. At a speech in the Shiite holy city of Najaf, his guards wore Iranian-style outfits, identical gray suits with shirts and no ties. Yet now he has to answer to the Iraqi people about rebuilding the country. He goes from outsider to insider, and that means he has to look in all directions, including the fascist West, and not just toward Iran. And there you have it, the forces of fascism against Iran and Iraq, which are headquartered at the Freak Show in Washington, D.C., which you and I have to contend with on a daily basis, where Napolitano has helped to seal the fate of Americans by insisting that people be searched and groped and x-rayed in airports, where no one has ever really bothered anybody in the last 10 years. In fact, the only people that have been arrested for any type of terrorist activity were those that were basically baited and supped and dined with FBI and CIA and joint task force representatives who basically created these terrorists artificially, gave them fake bombs, fake detonators, and set them up so they could have some sort of a press conference showing how great they were for stopping a terrorist who wasn't a terrorist at all, but was simply some little glue head that they were able to find and to mold, and then whose lives they were able to ruin in their fascism and in their dictatorial powers, in which they seek to dumb down and destroy all elements of freedom in America. The untold damage to freedom that artificial fear creates, fear created by the Freak Show in Washington against the people of America, who are now forced to contemplate being groped in almost any place they go, such as restaurants, department stores, swimming pools, etc. Every degradation that Napolitano can think of is thrown out into the floor of the press, and the press says nothing about it in terms of how inappropriate these actions are. Because the press is a part of the fascist structure and seeks to promote all of the parts of the government which are pro-war and anti-American constitution. Meanwhile, the bankers, who are in league with the drug syndicates of this world, have played with the money supply, have counterfeited products which they've sold to hundreds of countries, bankrupting them in their speculative ingratitude for all of the things that have been given to them by the governments who allow banks to print fake, phony paper money with the promise that they will be responsible, which in fact they are not. And if you thought the Republicans rolled hat, leapfrogging into the past with the refurbished Hubble Space Telescope, a team of astronomers say that they have detected what may be the most distant and earliest galaxy yet found, which goes way back beyond the birth of the Republican Party. This galaxy is a smudge of light, only a tiny fraction of the size of our own Milky Way galaxy. Yet it existed when the universe was only 480 million years old. And its light has been on its way to us for 13.2 billion years, which is a lot longer than the 200 years that the Republican Party has been around. Meanwhile, the Fed is lukewarm on the economy and jobs. And the U.S. Federal Reserve gave a economic assessment on Wednesday that despite signs of recovery was strengthening, it said high unemployment still justified its $600 billion bond buying program. Well, of course it did, because the bonds would be bought through the banks of the Federal Reserve, therefore giving the criminals who run those banks free rein to grace their wallets with more public money. I realize that some of you are waiting for me to tell you what I think of the President's State of the Union message. First of all, I consider it to be trash. It was basically the usual fare that we get with these meetings between Congress and the President, where the President tries to make every bad thing that he's ever done look gracious and good, when in fact it is not. He tried to say that we need to strengthen our wallets and stop spending, and then at the same time he turned around and said that we need to spend heavily on infrastructure to make sure that our economy pulls out of the crisis that it's in. He said that the banks need to be watched and they need to be punished for what they've done, yet he filled his entire administration with the same banking thieves that destroyed the economy through their speculations, which were not only illegal but highly unwarranted and caused, as he said, the depression that's hit the entire world. So why should anyone listen to a president who has appointed the very bankers who destroyed the economy and who destroyed everything that Americans have worked for 250 years, practically? Why should you listen to a man like that? I suppose because he's president. But just because he's president and has added to the chaos of the economic breakdown by appointing the mafia thugs from the banking industry to run his administration doesn't mean that you should continue to listen to him. Oh yes, you should listen to him because you can't get away from him. But remember, you know what he's all about. He's for the bankers. He's rich. He's a millionaire. He's always been a millionaire. And he also has no desire for democracy, as can be seen in the way in which he conducted his first 2 years of the administration, the step over the minority party, and everything that he did. So why in the world should you even consider him to be someone worth your respect? He isn't. He's a very disrespectful person, as is the government of the United States of America itself, which is still busy killing millions of people in the Middle East and intends to continue to do so. I would like to thank you for listening to the world today, and I ask you to send donations on the donations page of AmericanUSSR.com. And please, Twitter and Facebook to AmericanUSSR.com and to these radio shows, so that your friends too will be able to listen to The World Today by Frank Weltner. Thank you and have a wonderful day.